Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, comic books, and space.
Space.
The Final Frontier. Mm-hmm. We are meeting, a guy and I are here. I've already blown the intro. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Kai English.
Hey, I've also blown the intro because without you making a joke, I'm like, hey, God, we need Dan more than we can
admit. Yeah, Dan is not here.
Is what this means.
He's on vacation. Yeah. And so while the cat's away, the mice
cats
will discuss Star Trek.
More or less. I was feeling pretty bad about it, except he texted us a photo of him and his family in front of an Enterprise model this morning. So this is what you get, Dan. We're going to talk Star Trek at you.
Although we had already decided that we were going to do something before he sent that picture.
Yeah, but I did feel the day feeling pretty guilty until he rubbed it in our faces. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Now we just don't feel guilty about
it. Right. Yeah. Let it be known, though, that we're doing this mostly not because Dan doesn't love Star Trek as much as us, if not more, but because he tries to keep things on track and we do not. So
exactly. Yeah. We are agents of chaos. We're Q entities.
Yes. Oh man, that's a good topic too. Anyway, let's get to a little bit of Biff news first. Deadpool 3 trailer came out with Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. Pretty fun and exciting. We love Dan. Mm-hmm. We're not going to discuss it. There you go. X-Men has been going along kind of heavy. We'd already made a plan to wait for this 4-episode sort of set to complete. And so next time you hear an episode of Biff, those 4 will be out and we'll discuss it with Dan because X-Men feels like his baby. I guess he brought it to the table for us.
Well, this show for sure. Yeah. I mean,
I don't mean all X-Men, but yes, certainly.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he's the one who watched it in the 90s.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And pretty good call so far. I'm enjoying this season. Yeah. Kind of heavy. Kind of, you know.
Yeah. I haven't watched the most recent one. I haven't watched the most recent one yet.
But okay. Oh, well.
It's on my list.
Yeah. The one prior to the most recent one is.
That's the big one.
And is that it for superhero news? That's it. This is we got nothing.
The big stuff anyway. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Good show.
I mean, I heard another thing that's very, very much of a rumor, but I won't bring it up just because it's like I think it's too much of it's too much of a sketchy rumor for us to even talk about particularly, but also we shouldn't talk about it with that answer.
Yeah. And if it's too sketchy for us, it's pretty sketchy.
It's really sketchy.
You want to hit the warp core?
We had talked about Star Trek. Just do it. We're going to do a warp core, and it's a bit of an ad hoc one. We don't really have an exact idea of what we're going to talk about, but the I think the opening topic, if you will allow it, is I know that you and I both are big rewatchers of Star Trek, so we of course try and keep up on the new ones as they come out, but I, you know, as I've said many times, it's my comfort food, and I love to watch old episodes of Star Trek. Really, any show, I watch all of them. I probably rewatch the most recent ones the least, I would say, but I still rewatch just because I've seen them more recently, I suppose. I definitely rewatch. Stuff I was just rewatching some Enterprise episodes. Not to diss that show particularly, but it's not the highest on my list of the shows.
Yeah, I actually had not watched all of Enterprise until quite recently when it was available on Netflix. When it was coming out, I started watching it, and they immediately lost me in the first episode with like sexy T'Pol getting like. Gelled up. It was like, okay.
Gelled up, yeah.
Voyager had already kind of lost me with the introduction of Seven of Nine. Mm-hmm. You know, it just felt like I specifically.
It's not,
not
and
me,
I'm sure
like,
it's not the it's not the
young man
the
being pandered to. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't even give the character a chance, to be honest. I was like, oh god, come on! You put a hot woman in a cat suit, and like, I just felt like it was not really what I loved about Star Trek. Although Star Trek has always had, you know, green women dancing. There's always been an element of that, but like,
there's a bit of it. Yeah,
it felt a little bit too
a little horny.
Yeah, it felt a little bit too like just trying to reel me in, and I kind of rejected it on principle. Not in a principled way, just that like. I felt like it was talking down to me. A show that I thought was supposed to be, or trying to at its best, talking up to me, posing interesting new questions and ideas. I felt had been sort of talking down to my most base instincts. That said, after having exhausted all of the rest of Star Trek many times over, I started to watch Enterprise. Still didn't love it, to be honest. It's the weakest one, but I've seen it through like two or three times now. And Amanda, my wife-to-be, actually, she says it's her favorite show, which is already putting our marriage on the
there
rocks.
There are definitely people who like it the most.
Yeah, I don't know why. I think it was more like she just came to it at that point. I think it...
Yeah.
You know...
I think it. Yeah, I mean, I think that has a lot to do with people's enjoyment of Star Trek. It's the one that you, hit you at the right time.
Yeah.
becomes your favorite in a lot of ways. So I always have a hard time between TOS and TNG.
Me too.
Because TOS is the one I grew up on, obviously, and then TNG is probably it's the one that sort of cemented to me that this was going to hopefully be an ongoing thing. It wasn't just going to stop.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
It made it more, it made it more into a franchise rather than just a show that got some movies.
Right. So I grew up watching TOS Sunday mornings with my sister. I think they played, like, the CBC played two back-to-back. and, like, it was just a real, again, comfort food kind of thing, because by the time, you know, I was 13, 14, 15, I'd seen them all, like, 20 times, and everybody on my street had, because it was terrestrial television. Sunday morning, the kids have nothing to do except watch Star Trek, and even people who were not into, like, watching sci-fi shows had seen Star Trek a million times. Everybody knew what a Horta was, everybody knew what a Gorn was, everybody knew all of the weird stuff. Like, that was just in the common lexicon of my street and little neighborhood, because that's what you did, you watched Star Trek. I can't remember how old I was when, I guess I was 15 when TNG came out. And I was a little, not upset, but I was like a little frustrated because I had to babysit some kid down the street when it was on, when it first aired.
When it was airing. Yeah.
So I sat down and I watched it. I think he put him to bed or I told him to shut up or something. Yeah. Sorry, Guillaume. I don't know how long ago that was, like 40 some odd years ago. So don't worry about it. Maybe not that long, but anyway, long enough.
He's never recovered.
He's never recovered. Yeah, he's probably still stuffed in the cupboard I locked him into. but I was old enough to like aspects of Encounter at Farpoint, but not dig it. I wasn't excited. And I think it was because it wasn't the old TOS. It felt a little bit more luxury linery than like sort of the hard deck or the hard bridge of TOS.
It's the carpet.
Yeah, the uniforms kind of turned me off a little bit. I don't know why. Yeah. Just because they weren't the old ones. I think
they were jumpsuits.
Yeah, I think
jumpsuits are they for some reason they have this obsession with trying to make jumpsuits work.
Yeah, it's like fetch. It's never gonna work.
And they don't.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, even Enterprise does that, right? And at least the Enterprise ones feel a little bit more like a Submariner thing. Like they feel.
Yeah, I think those are probably the best of all the jumpsuits.
I think so.
They make the most sense. And they got pockets and stuff. I mean, they look a little bit more natural rather than just like, we're going to put you in this Lycra jumpsuit and there, that's your uniform.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, as TNG progressed, so I kind of turned off on it. The first season stank, to be honest. Like, it's not like the next one.
First two seasons.
Yeah, it's not like the next one made me feel any better about
it. There are a few yes. episodes. And I think the fact that there are a few episodes that are decent in the first two seasons, just a few, not enough. Yeah. But a few that it was, I kept coming back to it. I stuck with it anyway. Yeah. I watched it consistently. And I remember by the time, it started in 87. Yeah. So 87 to 88, 88, 89. Yeah. By the time, so 90 rolled around. And I was dating my later to become wife at the time. And I moved out to Seattle. And I told her, you know, call me frequently, but don't call me on Saturday at 7 o'clock. Yes, I'm going to be watching Star Trek, and I'm not going to pick the phone up.
that's how you know she's the one to marry, right? Like, okay, I respect your.
Yep, she's like,
I respect your boundaries around television shows. Yeah, so the first season is like, I think the second one is Naked Now, which again, sort of, I think I still had the reaction that I did in Enterprise, where it's like, you know, obviously Denise Crosby, Tasha Yar in that sexy dress, great. But I think I was 13 at the time. But I was like, okay, I don't even know these characters. Like, how? Like, yeah. They start playing with them and their motivations. It's the second episode. I don't know.
Yeah.
At least...
It's weird.
Like, when Sulu went bananas with his sword, I'm like, it's fun, because I've seen him in 100 different... Well, maybe 78 different things.
But that's because of syndication.
Yeah.
That's because of syndication, because that episode, I think, is, like, maybe the fourth episode of season one of TOS. Oh, it's something...
Yes.
It's actually quite early. It's... Yeah. But because of syndication, I probably had seen, at least a dozen episodes before I saw that.
Oh,
and okay. And that, I mean, we can talk about this if you want, but I think that's my favorite episode of the original series.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It really, I mean, it's the one that I think of the most, and there are ones that I
just because George Takei with his shirt off. I don't blame you.
No, it's, well, I mean,
sure.
Not made of stone, but, no, it's the Kirk and Spock stuff.
Yeah.
Mostly. I think it's all super well done. They had a great idea of who those characters were, and they managed to put it on display early on.
I guess being that early, that helped inform it a bit, you know what I mean? Like, they needed to know who those characters were in order to play with them in the way that they do there.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. So how do you feel about Naked Now, like the second one? In hindsight, I kind of like it. Like... It's funny, and
it's a retread of the basic premise, obviously, but it also just treats it a lot more like they're drunk.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a little bit, it's less heady, it's less, it doesn't delve into the characters as nearly as much as Naked Time does, and it doesn't work for whatever.
Yeah, like
for whatever
they
reason.
Go for the cheap joke of like sleeping with an android kind of thing, which whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I do like
the and they have them all in the background doing, you know, like it's more like the episode of Lower Decks where Mariner has to do the training sessions in the holodeck sort of these holodeck tubes, and there's a Naked Now scenario. It's like,
yeah. I do love Lower Decks. I do appreciate that later scripts in TNG started calling back to that and actually making it more poignant. Like, they gave Data feelings about that encounter.
Yeah.
Which I thought worked really well. It's like they rehabilitated it, like a dud of an episode, and they made it actually something that like they could hang Data's hat on. I mean... Unfortunately, they never serviced the Tasha Yar character terribly well, and then Denise Crosby left on account of that. I was happy. She's great when she returns, but, like, you know, I kind of don't blame her for that. But, yeah, the fact that they managed to sort of hinge some of Data's personality, or, for lack of a better term, like humanity, on that episode, it kind of rehabilitates it, makes it worth having. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and it comes up as late as Picard.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in the most recent season of Picard.
Yeah.
Which is...
When is Measure of a Man? Is that season two, I think? It's pretty early.
I think so. Yeah. I think it's season two.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, that's a good one.
So,
and then we also, you know, then season two also has the introduction of the Borg. That's a pretty good episode, even if it's
yeah
not as good as later episodes. It's a standout episode from season two for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you got the Q and the Borg, like double yeah whammy of bad guys.
There's a lot yeah of great, like, I mean, there's a lot of creepy lighting work and camera work done in that, I think. There's just that, I mean, I remember that scene, you know, the scene where the Borg shows up in engineering
mm-hmm
is sort of disturbing, right?
Yeah, because it just does not care, which is weird yeah for our bad guys. Like, they're usually, like, twirling their mustaches and, like, you know,
yeah,
Gilda Cat.
Many of them literally.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Gilda Cat as a Romulan is there, like, threatening them at the end of season one, which is great. It was that guy. Yeah, it was Mark Alimo. Yeah.
Oh, was it? He was a Romulan?
Yeah, I think he's the Romulan. He's one of the Romulan captains of the Warbird that uncloaks at the end of season one. I think the penultimate episode of season one, because I think the final one is Conspiracy, and the one before that is where they pick up a bunch of people who are being frozen in tubes.
I think that's the last episode. Is the two people? I think. I'm not positive though.
Either way, we see that beautiful Warbird decloak.
Man, yeah, Conspiracy is episode 24. The Neutral Zone is episode 25.
Okay, cool. What a great way to end the first season, like a weak season. Yeah, but yeah, man.
Mark Alimo is Commander Tabok. I did not remember that.
There you go. Yeah.
To be fair, I have not seen that episode. It's not. We were going to talk about our rewatch strategies, yeah, and one of my strategies is generally not to watch seasons one and two.
Yeah, there are some gems in there, but actually, so yeah, let's get back on.
But yeah, that actually was, I mean, I think at some point you get to the point where you have watched them all so much that it becomes very difficult to figure out.
Yeah.
You want to watch a Star Trek episode, but you feel like you've seen them so many times that it's difficult. So I, at one point I did go through some of seasons one and two mm-hmm and watch ones that I thought, okay, that one was pretty good. I'll watch that one again. And I did not pick that one though. Maybe I'll go back and watch that too.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I don't think. Yeah, it's okay.
It's got the guy who plays guitar who orders a martini.
The past people annoying.
Yeah, guess they're less annoying now. I don't know why. I think it's because now they're less contemporary. And at the time, they felt very much like characters from like an 80s TV show. Mm-hmm. Like they were like plucked right out of Magnum PI or, you know, Falcon's Nest, Falcon's Crest, whatever that was. Like
right.
They have very Falcon's Nest. Very typical 80s style.
Different show.
Yeah, kind of stuff. But so yeah, I think it's worth rewatching. I guess when you're doing a rewatch, I suppose you've already spoken to this, but I tend to just go from the beginning onward. Because a lot of the time when I'm watching it, I'm just kind of watching it to fall asleep. If that makes sense. Like, I kind of, not directly fall asleep, although sometimes.
Well, that's the easiest way.
But it's very comforting, and it takes my mind off it, and if I haven't seen it in a year or so, it's...
Because mm-hmm you can turn it on, and that way, if that's what you're doing, you can turn it on, and it'll just keep playing.
Exactly, yeah, because in Canada, at least, it was. I don't know if it's still on Netflix, but I just press play and just go. I will skip. I think the only one that... I want this preserved someplace, and I don't want it removed and memory hold. But the super racist one in season one has got to go. Like, if that just dropped off Netflix and you could find it in the archives somewhere, sure. Yeah. But like, that's, it's no good. It's
that is definitely one that I have not watched in a long time.
It's kind of antithetical to the concept of Star Trek in a way, right? Like, that's mm-hmm just not cool. But yeah, even the weak ones you can get through and find something a little amusing or something.
Yeah. Well, even the last episode of TOS is not, you know, is somewhat antithetical to Star Trek as well, right?
The time travel, like the...
It's the one... No, it's the one where he switches...
Oh, TOS, yes.
Yeah, TOS.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, no, that's garbage. There's a lot of garbage.
Yeah,
original series.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's definitely some garbage TOS as well. It's just, it's, you know, it's sprinkled more loosely throughout.
I wonder if I forgive it more because it predated me. Like, I wasn't watching it contemporary. Sure. Like, I always felt like almost like a Gunsmokey kind of thing. Like, it was old-timey and yet weirdly progressive at the same time. It was very colorful.
Right.
The characters were all larger than life. Like, it wasn't like a naturalistic form of acting a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I just kind of, and you know, they're playing Fizbin with gangsters, and like, it's, there's weird enough stuff that I just kind of got away with it, or it got away with it for me at least. And I don't know, like, if they started doing that now, would I like it? I don't know. Like, if you just came in to Strange New Worlds and they were doing weird and wacky stuff, I don't know.
You know what? When TNG started, mm-hmm. I remember looking at the special effects and thinking that they were not as good as the movie special effects, obviously, mm-hmm. and kind of liking that, like liking it that it was special effects were slightly cheesy, like that, because that to me was Star Trek. Like, they were way better, obviously, than the original series, but it was also just like enough that it was obviously fake.
Yeah.
that it was like, okay, I'm watching a show, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not.
There's a huge,
you know, whereas with like The Expanse or something like that, where it seems much more realistic.
Yes.
And I think as that show got on, I think their budget got less and it wasn't quite as, but anyway, but it's a little bit more intense, and maybe even Battlestar Galactica, just because it seems more realistic.
Yeah.
And Star Trek is not a show that I want to watch for intensity, obviously, because, like I said, it's comfort food.
Yeah. Put a pin in that, because I kind of want to revisit that. It's like Doctor Who has a charm, right? Like, Daleks are terrifying for kids.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're like buckets with a plunger on them. Like, mm-hmm. they are kind of scary. They are legit scary. But like, I think if you try to do a hard-boiled Dalek in hard-boiled sets, you know, like, it would be kind of, I don't think it would work. I mean, they're screaming exterminate,
they had to update them to fly, right?
So yeah.
They, you know, because it didn't, like, it didn't make any sense. Like, they can't even get
it's
upstairs.
An inherently
like,
silly idea. Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, they work, and they're still pretty terrifying. But I think that you could, it's almost that uncanny valley. So it's not, the uncanny valley is a very specific mm-hmm. term. But, I mean, along those lines of, like, there's, If the effects and the scenery and the acting is all like a little chintzy, you can buy into it a little bit more than if it's trying to be earnest and like a little bit hardcore. But you can cross a line where being cheesy becomes a detriment rather than an asset, you know. And I think Star Trek at its best toes that line pretty well.
Yeah,
like the one we were talking about with the Borg, terrifying. It was still brightly lit on a cruise ship, but it was terrifying. You know, like, the fact that that Borg did not care about them was just a testament to how badass the Borg were. Like, they do not care. They were all about the technology, and they just wanted to scan the ship. And then when they just use that cutting beam and slice out a cylinder, that's, oh man, it's, they set up that villain so, so good. I almost pivoted into the Ferengi, but who cares? Whatever. They get better, quote unquote, better later. They get more fun.
So they have they have the Ferengi and the Borg, and then those bugs.
Those
little scorpion things, whatever they are.
Yeah, the Nubbin bugs, the mind control bugs. Yeah.
And those guys never come back.
Nope. I'm surprised Lower Decks hasn't touched
them. I think
they
just decided that was a failure of an episode. They tried something, they didn't like it.
Yeah.
And so they left it behind.
Now
it's not to say it might not come back someday, because it's certainly possible
somebody's gonna, like Mike McMahon, is gonna pull him off the shelf, you know, for Lower Decks or something.
I bet it must have been mentioned. I mean, it's definitely 100%.
Yeah. And I don't
remember when, but I'm sure it must have.
They've got to be some sort of progenitor of like the Rathacon city eels, right? Like, they're very similar kind of critters.
So we were talking about rewatch strategies. So your strategy is mostly just like starting from the beginning, and
so that's it. It depends. Sometimes I'll start like, I'll pick which one, like what series I want to watch, and it's often one that I haven't seen, let's say, for a year. Because if I'm doing them more in a year, I start to go, it's too much, you know. Like, I'll be able to just quote every line, and part of the relaxation is like, I'm getting back into a comfortable situation, but one that is not I can't just do it in my sleep, although I probably can do most of them in my sleep. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, so DS9 is kind of a heavier watch most of the time. Yeah. TNG mm-hmm. is like so episodic and fun, and like there's just it's pretty light. Voyager kind of, I think, splits the line down the middle on that. There's some sort of heavier Voyager stuff. It is less serialized in that they do have like an ongoing like ramifications, you know, like people join the ship and leave the ship. There's, you know, it's a little different. And they're certainly moving beyond the bad guys of like the first season. I'm going to forget their names because they're kind of forgettable.
The Kazon,
thank you. Like, you know, they move past them, and then they spend too much time with the Borg for my liking, because I like my Borgs, like I like my Wolverines or Vaders, you know, like a little bit opaque and mysterious. And then I guess I've seen Enterprise a couple of times, and I saw it once just because I'm like, look, I've done all of the other Trek, I may as well bite the bullet and watch this one. And there's actually some pretty good episodes in that that I legitimately enjoy. Like Seven, I think T'Pol is probably one of the better characters on the show.
Yeah, and I think I did not, when I first started watching it, I was like, not a fan of T'Pol at all. And I think one of the things that made me become more of a fan was seeing outtakes from the show. Yeah. Because seeing her as a person makes you appreciate how much she's actually acting.
Oh, is she like a big goof or something? Is she laughing a lot?
Yeah, okay. she's laughing and joking. I mean, like, you know, she's not a huge goof, but she is, she's obviously not like that all the time,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, of course.
It's the same thing. Actually, you know what? It's the same thing with Deanna Troi. If you ever listen to it, I mean, I listened to Gates McFadden's podcast, and when she was on there, she's foul-mouthed, and she's talkative, and she's like, she's just like, you know, She seems like she'd be a lot of fun to hang out
with. Yeah, she's like a pretty funny British sailor, kind of like. I'm pretty sure she's got a ration of rum every day, you know? Yeah.
She worked in her, like, her aunt's or uncle's, like, fashion shop in London in the 60s.
Oh, wow.
And, like, all these, like, British musicians would come in there all the time. And so she knew, like, a bunch of.
Holy cow.
Like, you know. Yeah, yeah.
Was she
a
child? So like, I don't know when she was born.
She was young. I mean, she was like in her teens, I think. Something like that. Maybe it was the early 70s. I don't remember exactly, but it was, you know, it was around that time when a lot of,
like, the British invasion's going on, and like everybody's
I mean, like, just like a lot of British bands that you definitely know the names of. That made me appreciate the fact that they're not just on their being themselves, and they're really doing some they're really doing something, making deliberate choices about what their personality is like. And I think, you know, seeing some later episodes with her in it, because when I first watched Enterprise, I noped out about second season sometime. I think I was just like, okay, this isn't very good. It's not worth my time to I was probably recording it on a VHS. I don't remember, but I was definitely programming something to record it. It might have been an ITV, it was something I had to go out of my way in order to do.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, you know, there weren't any streaming services then.
I think so. That's kind of why Voyager I never finished, and Enterprise I kind of just dropped on the floor. Just because around that time, I was like a little older for Voyager, and I had stuff to do that night or whatever. And if you missed it, you're out of luck, right? Like, and it wasn't compelling enough to go back and watch it, which is one of the reasons I love the conceit of our pal Scott's Random Trek. It's Trek.
Because that's how we used to watch
inherently it. Inherently random to me. Inherently random. We were talking about the original series earlier on a Sunday morning. Completely random. They didn't try to put them in any kind of order at all. It was just whatever.
Yeah.
And that's why I like it so much. But once you've lost track of Voyager, it's like, okay, well, I haven't seen it for 3 weeks, and I'm out of the habit. And it doesn't matter, because I could go pick it up. But I can't go back and watch the other ones. Not that I need to. But Enterprise, I was like, okay, I'm not watching it. And I just, out of sight, out of mind, did it. until, again, they were available on Netflix in Canada, at least. And then I just binged the whole thing from beginning to end. And I really did get a far better appreciation of both Seven and T'Pol. And other characters, too.
Yeah.
But those ones had been sort of iconic to me. It's like, okay, you're pandering to me. And I was wrong. I think they were pandering to the male gaze completely.
Sure.
But Star Trek has a deep enough bench of thoughtful writers that they managed to actually eke out great characters. And those actors did a great job with what they were given. And, you know, I think the writers started giving them more, and they both lived up to the challenges, and I think they both did well. There's particularly, I think my favorite episode of Enterprise is actually, it goes back in time. Something Ridge, something River, I forget what, but like it's T'Pol.
Carbon Creek. Carbon Creek.
I love that one. Carbon Creek. Great.
Yeah, that's good.
She's great.
It's a story. You know, she's just telling a story, right? And they're kind of disbelieving. They're like, no,
yeah,
that didn't happen.
Yeah,
there's no way that happened.
Did they resolve it?
Vulcans
I can't tell if
on Earth in the '50s or whatever.
Yeah, I can't remember if they resolve it. Like that, she's telling the truth, or is she
they
stringing them on.
At the very end, she pulls out. Yeah. She goes back to her quarters, and she's got the purse that her
the artifact that
great grandmother or whatever had when she visited Earth.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that episode. It's fun.
So a few months ago, I was just in the mood for like I just wanted something. You know, I wanted to watch Star Trek, and I wanted to not be. Not that Star Trek is super challenging, but I didn't want the drumhead, right? I didn't want something that was heady with a lot of like moral implications. I wanted pew pew.
Yeah.
And so I was looking around, and I think I watched the TNG episode first, and then I picked there's an episode, I'm trying to remember what the name of it is. There's an episode of Enterprise that is early on, and it's before they even have like the phasers working, and they run into this ship that just like beats the crap out of them, and it's not even an alien that even like ever comes back again.
It's just a one-off that's already way more advanced
and it's basically they just like they get their butts kicked, they come back again, you know, they get their butts kicked again, and then they're like, okay, like how fast can we get the phasers ready? And they get the phasers ready, and they manage to, like, you know, punch them back in the nose at the end. It's fun. It's just, like, it's not super challenging. It's not, like, a lot of, you know, it doesn't change, it's not going to change the way you think about anything, for sure. But it really fit the bill for what I wanted at the
time. May I suggest the episode where, you know, I'm sure there's some Star Trek purist out there that'll get upset about it, but where they encounter the Romulans and they have like a mine stuck to their ship.
Yep,
love that episode.
Yep. I actually, that might have been the one that I watched first instead of it might not have been a TNG episode because I'm pretty sure I watched that one as well.
I mean, it's kind of heavy. Like, there's a character who's in like legit danger. Like, it's harrowing, but
Silent Enemy, I believe, is the name of the episode. It's episode 12.
It feels like again a submarine movie. You know, like he may as well be sealed. Mm-hmm. They may as well be debating whether or not that compartment is flooding and they need to seal the character below decks, right? Like, pretty great. I like the discussion between Archer and, it's not Trip who's there, it's the annoying British guy, who I'm sure is a Dominic
Malcolm.
Malcolm. His character's
I like him.
Yeah, really? I guess.
Yeah, I kind of like him. I mean, you know, he can definitely be annoying at times, and I don't think they ever quite got his character right. I think I don't remember exactly what I think there was an interview with him, and I think I read it instead of like seeing the video of it, but they were asking about like gay subtext for him, and he was like, oh, I was totally playing him gay at the beginning.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, I didn't know that.
But unfortunately the writers didn't, you know,
they didn't pick
writers
up on
and
it.
Producers were like, no, he's not gay, he's we need to, and then, you know, we need to have him chasing around some women later. It's like,
do we?
Okay.
Yeah. I always like the
another 20 years to get a good gay representation on Star Trek.
Yeah, that's a little for how progressive it is. I kind of wish that they bit harder down on like actually addressing this kind of things. Like I know Andrew, I'm going to forget his name. Yeah, the guy who plays Garrick was
Robinson.
Yeah. Was like, oh yeah, no, I was 100% playing a gay guy. I was like totally into Bashir. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I don't know if Alexander Siddig has said the same thing, but they're clearly playing those scenes.
They're both totally into that.
Yeah.
And what's funny, so, you know, I'm still on Tumblr. I follow Tumblr regularly, and it's another place where I get a lot of Star Trek stuff. And it is the one, you know, I used to, you know, I'm not on Instagram anymore. I'm you know, backed away from a lot of social media stuff, but one of the more relaxing things for me to do is to look at the For You tab on Tumblr, because it actually does a pretty good job of, like, here are funny pictures of dogs,
yeah.
Here are, you know, hilarious videos, and here's a lot of Star Trek stuff. Which is great.
Tumblr feels like
it also gives me a lot of Kirk and Spock slash
I was about to say Tumblr we know Marco, and like, you know, he was helped develop it early on, and I don't think this was on their minds, and David Karp, right? But Tumblr seems to have morphed into a manifestation, like a social media manifestation of Star Trek fanfic. Like, if Star Trek fanfic could become a social network,
definitely Star Trek.
Sure. Specifically the Kirk Spock stuff. I'm not a huge fanfic historian or anything, but my understanding is like that Kirk Spock stuff is like the early, like the precursor for like a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. And supposedly Gene Roddenberry, I mean, there's some story about him, like, keeping, you know, like he had a bunch of it on his bookshelf.
Oh, yeah.
Like he had, yeah, like he had.
Oh, good for him.
He was, yeah. You know, like, he thought, I don't know if he thought it was funny or whatever, but he followed it, apparently, back in the day. Yeah.
Good for him. I mean, it says something that he didn't stomp it, right? So.
No, yeah, right. I don't particularly ascribe to that. Personally,
to fanfic stuff?
I don't.
Oh, there's the
Kirk Spock.
No
stuff.
No, who cares?
But I mean, that's your thing. Absolutely, exactly. You know, have fun. Yeah. But I really think that there is. I mean, the subtext between Garrick and Bashir,
yeah.
I think, is much heavier and works a lot better for me for some reason. Like it seems much more. And I don't know if that's just because of how I aged or whatever.
Yeah.
But it also just seems like it's a little bit more obvious.
I agree. I mean, Garrick definitely knows what side Bashir dresses is, for sure.
Well, he is his tailor.
He is his tailor, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that's all I mean by that. But the other thing is like, if I'm Alexander Siddig and I'm given the lecherous task of like hitting on Dax all the time, or whichever woman happens to be in the room, that's no fun. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to be a lecherous jerk. And if I get to have some scenes across from Andrew, I'm going to forget his name again. Gosh, Robinson. I get to play a more nuanced and fun, flirty kind of thing. Sure, I would way rather do that than be like a lecherous jerk that the script tells me to be. Appreciate it. And anybody that gets or sees themselves in that relationship, great, so good. Like I just kind of wish they had been a little bit more upfront about it. You know,
I agree. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wish that had been more of a thing.
Yeah,
right. I think it would have been an interesting. You know, you have this naive doctor. I mean, the relationship is interesting.
Anyway. Yeah,
it's and Garrick is one of the best characters that Star Trek has ever created.
Oh yeah, 100%. Like, because Bashir thinks he's like an adventurous sort of, for lack of a better term, man of the world. Like he's well educated, but he's got like a Yale / Harvard view of the world, right? I don't know. I'm just picking those at random. So if anybody's going to get upset about that, whatever. Like an Ivy League sort of view of the world. And in his perspective, he's sort of slumming it on this outpost in the middle of nowhere to bring them frontier medicine. I think at one point he's been calling it frontier medicine. And he's confronted.
He does. In the very, very first episode, he calls it frontier medicine.
Perfect. And then he's confronted by a seemingly naive, like a tailor, like the most unassuming thing, who is way more wise to the ways of pretty much everything than Bashir. And it's such a great juxtaposition. And the restraint of having them only have like sort of little conversations at like a public cafe great. You know, like they really, really did that relationship like an immense amount of justice.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if Garrick was meant to be one of the core cast, but he certainly earned his way there because he, like, every performance is like a banger.
Yeah, he's just fantastic. Yeah, he and Shran are probably two of my favorite, like, certainly my two favorite, like, characters who are not main characters.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you really can't go wrong with him. he's just in everything all of the time. He's what, two roles in... two roles, at least, in DS9?
Oh, at least. Oh, there's more. Yeah, there's he's Wei Yun.
Man, I'm blanking on his name, and I love that guy.
Wei Yun, and then
Racerhead,
one of the Ferengi.
Brunt. He's Brunt and Wei Yun. Brunt, like minimum that. He's probably somewhere.
But he appears. Yeah, he appears as other.
Yeah, but I
other. and he shows up. He shows up in the holodeck as a human at one point, and then in the flash, he's in the flashback. You know, the Cisco flashback, the hallucination flashback, as a. As a human, so you get to see him out of costume, which is fun. He's
what the heck's his name? Jeffrey Combs.
He needs to come back in live action. They need to find a way to get him on the Strange New Worlds.
He has to be. Yeah, he's in Lower Decks. He's one of the he's the voice of one of the crazy robots. Jeffrey Combs is just he makes everything better. And honestly, I feel like he's
just constantly trying to get people to plug him into a power source.
It's so good. Love that guy.
So I
don't know if we're talking about rewatch strategies.
A lot of times I'll just pick like time travel stuff. Like, oh, I want to watch some time travel episodes, or you know, pick a theme and just like.
I was going to ask about the horizontal aspect of it.
Or Mirror Universe. I watched a bunch of Mirror Universe stuff too at one point, and just like pick a theme and go through all of the. Series and pick out ones that I don't have to I'm not usually so pedantic about it that I like I gotta watch them all. I mean, I'll often just pick the ones that I feel like watching pick a theme and go back and find something that speaks to you.
I think you like me are not I don't think you get bent out of shape if the canon gets a little weird, or like the, you know, the Klingons look a little weird in the DS9 episode, you know, like whatever, like weird little technical stuff is like, it's fine. Who cares? Just go with this.
I was not happy with the Disco treatment of Klingons early on, particularly. I mean,
the makeup like or the cultural. Yeah,
the cultural stuff was mostly okay. I mean, actually, on a rewatch, I found the cultural stuff better than I did the first time, because I thought what was really interesting is they make. The Klingons view the Federation as the Borg, basically.
I did like that.
And they fear assimilation and having their culture wiped out, which I think is an interesting way to take on their antipathy towards the Federation.
Yeah, well, specifically, they started in TOS as a stand-in for the Russians, right? The Soviets, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know if the Romulans were also that, or the Romulans were meant to be Chinese Communist Party. I don't know what.
I assume they were meant to be the Chinese, but you know, I mean, I think.
But it doesn't matter. You don't need to want to. Yes.
It's just they're a foil. You know,
they're a foil. But we never, you know, that. So the like you said, the source of the genesis of the antipathy was. Not really explained. It didn't need to be explained back then because whatever, they're the bad guys. So that's all you need to know. That does make sense. And I particularly love that little speech where, I'm horrible with names, Bob. What was the guy's name? The albino Klingon. He gives a speech where he's like, they will say, we come in peace. And like, and that's the trigger word for them. Like, Volk, yeah. Like, the whole idea of, like, them saying we'll come in peace, but then their insidiousness will, like, their cloying, the insidiousness will sort of, like, sway you to their side. I really like that speech, and I was oddly reminded of the speech that Quark gives to Garrick when the Federation isn't there, and he's just trying to describe them as root beer. Like, it's so sweet and cloying, and I'm like, it is.
That was perfect, too.
And it's not... In universe, it rings true, right? It's like these guys just come up; they're all sweet and, you know, cuddly. And all of a sudden,
It's, but you got to watch out.
Well, it's like, have you seen that?
That's how they get it.
Yeah, have you seen that meme of like, it's like a two-panel meme and there's a wolf and like trying to get food and it's like, what's the worst that could happen? And then the second frame is like a pug, like 10,000 years later. Like,
yes.
And that's kind of like culturally, like the cultural supremacy, I suppose, or the cultural dominance of the Federation is kind of seen like right. that. Which, in a way, and this is clearly we're making jokes and all that, but it is a comment on American cultural influence around the world, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, mm-hmm. and in fact, yeah. on Star Trek itself, like Star Trek is trying to be this good light. Pseudo-utopian future. It's never quite a utopia, and I think that's partially why I like it so much, is that there are still flaws. People are still flawed. But that element of trying to show a future where everybody gets along and is happy is part of the power of Star Trek around the world. And I think it's funny and yeah. fun and smart that they recognize that in universe too. And I should say,
yeah.
all of those people come around. Like, the Klingons come around, the Ferengi come around, Garak comes around, even the Cardassians. Well, I mean,
yeah, they
kind of come
never,
around. In it.
So far, they haven't joined, though. I mean, none of them... The only... Like, if you take Lower Decks as canon, which is it is, I mean, the Ferengi, yeah. I think, have gotten the closest, right? Because apparently they have started some sort of, like, first step to joining
yeah.
the Federation under Rom's. leadership yeah. as the Grand Negus.
Man, I would follow Rom anywhere.
So yeah, I mean, I always wanted the Klingons to join the Federation. I always thought, like, you know, but given, you know, by the time you get to TNG, and then towards the end of Deep Space Nine, when Martok takes over, it's like, boy, that you could see them joining
yeah.
the Federation at this point.
Yeah, man, I love Martok. He's such a good guy.
Yeah,
he's like one yeah. of my favorite characters for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many good scenery chewing Klingons.
Oh yeah, they all chew scenery. Yeah, that yeah. guy is just extra good at it. I don't know if they intended to keep him around because he was kind of an underling, right? Like he turned out to be the changeling instead of Garon, and then they killed him.
Yeah.
And I don't
yeah,
know if they'd know. Had a plan to be right. like, because they find him like a season later or so in that prison, which is another amazing episode, by the way,
mm-hmm.
Where he's yeah. like, Worf is fighting the Jem'Hadar guy, and the Jem'Hadar is like, I cannot yeah. defeat this Klingon, I can only kill him. And then he just gets blasted, like he gets killed. Like, man, I got so much respect for that Jem'Hadar. And that's a great line that they...
Yeah.
They tow a really great line with those Jem'Hadar, which is like, we are loyal to a fault, but we are also weirdly honorable. Like, that mm-hmm. whole thing is like, I'm not just going to yeah. kill this guy. Like, he's clearly... He's earned his salt, you know? He's one of us, so I'm not just going to yeah. kill him because I cannot defeat him. So great.
Yeah.
Man.
And then there's the ones, you know, there are ones where they sacrifice themselves, even knowing, like, the Vorta. Or those. Like, they I think they... Do they kill that? No, they don't kill that Vorta, do they? The one is betraying them. And they're like, well, he's betraying us, but but we gotta do what we gotta do.
They're trapped on that planet. He tells them to approach the Federation planet position, which is also... who they're also trapped on that planet. I forget. Rocks yeah. and Shoals is the name of the episode. And I love that Sisko's like, okay, hang on, I'm just going to go down and talk to the guy because maybe we can avert this. Another very Starfleet kind of thing. Yeah, I'm going to go tell him that we're going to kill you all if you don't, you know, stop. And they both just... they are resigned to their roles in a greater war, which is horrible, and it really sort of underscores the horrors of war. It's one of my favorite episodes of Star Trek. Is it... iconic? Like, is that episode what Star Trek is about? I don't think so, but part of it, you know what I mean? Part
yeah.
of part of the mm-hmm. sort of being true to yourself, or like examining the sort of conflicting interests, or I don't know how you would describe yeah. it. I don't know how to underscore how that feels like Star Trek to me, because it's not, you know, the Q,
well,
or it's not
our,
like
it sets our heroes
yeah.
you know, our heroes who are sort of free thinkers up against someone who has an ideology that is based on
compliance. I mean, is life.
Yeah, it's not really blind trust though, because he knows what's going on, right? I mean, he's told, does it anyway, like, because it's his job.
Right. It's, I guess, freedom versus compliance in a way. Yeah. Or individuality versus, like, I don't know. We need a whole new warp core just to discuss this one issue we've stumbled into.
That's right. I know.
So I guess there's two ways of doing it, right? Series by series. I think that's probably the way that I've done it more often. But there's also horizontal slices. Have you ever just gone back and watched, like, all of Worf, like, horizontally?
Yeah.
Yeah. You say that like you're admitting something. Yeah, yeah.
That's a bit of a labor of love. Some of the Worf episodes are really, like, okay.
I know.
But some of them are great. So
yeah, it's a little hit and miss. Like, that character is fascinating. He's certainly the longest lived character, or the most episodes, right?
Right, yeah.
And, you know, bless Dorn for getting in that makeup every time, because that's going to be arduous.
Oh, yeah. I've said this before, but for the listeners, for the readers, if you've never watched, go get to YouTube and find all of the Worf bloopers that you can find. There used to be a collection of them, like someone had like cut out specifically the Worf ones. And whenever I was in a bad mood, I would just like I would pull that up, and it disappeared, unfortunately. So you have to go back and watch them individually from the blooper sets from each season, but. He's so funny. I mean, like, he's just like, I mean, like, because he's so serious in his character, right? And so it's the funniest thing when he breaks. And there's one from season one or season two where they're, I think it's when they're like meeting up with a bunch of clones or something, and you can tell that he and Frakes have been at this for like hours. and they're just like, because they're constantly, they're cracking up at everything everybody says, and they're trying, you know, like, Dorn is trying to keep a straight face, and then all of a sudden Frakes breaks, and he's just like, oh, come on.
Yeah, Dorn is one of the funniest guys there, I think. Like, his deliveries, like, they give him such dour, serious lines, and his delivery is impeccable every time. I think by the end of DS9,
he's the perfect straight man. I mean, like, the episode, I mean, he gets great lines in Picard when he finally shows up in Picard in the third season. But also, like, this is an episode that I go back to all the time, which is the one where he's hopping universes.
What's
the name of that one? It's driving me crazy now. Parallels.
And
he, he's in a different universe, and Deanna's, you know, they're married, and she comes in and sits down on the bed, and he leans around the corner, just like, what is going on here? And his reaction when she starts, like, leans in to kiss him, he's like, ah!
It's so fun, because isn't his first tip off that he didn't win the Batleth contest? I love the cockiness of that, being like, wait a second, this universe cannot be right, because I didn't. I should have won. It's so funny. I was just mentioning this last night, I think, to Gid Mathieu of the Icon Factory on Mastodon. Take Me Out to the Holosuite is one of my all-time faves. It's a weird episode to be one of my faves, but it does such great character work, and it's so relaxing in that, you know, the later seasons of DS9 are, you know, pretty dark.
Right.
I like that one's just so fun, and just Worf yelling "Death to the Opposition!"
To the Opposition is a classic, classic line. But like in his introduction to that show, I think at the time I was wrong. I was like, oh, they're just dragging out Worf, and like, and then he's so great in that show.
He's really,
in a way,
really good,
he's better. Yeah. He's better in Deep Space Nine than he is in TNG.
I think he's
great on TNG.
I think he's a. I think as a character, he makes more mistakes on DS9. despite the fact that there's a hilarious supercut of him just getting told to shut up on, not shut up, but like every time he suggests something to Picard, he's like, no, we're not doing that. No, we're not. Like every time, like Geordi's giving a PowerPoint and he suggests something, it's no. And then Troy, and this is a bad episode for Troy, but Troy is suddenly pregnant and he's like, well, we should kill the baby. And everybody's like, no, like, no, we're not doing it. Like, it's just, it's so... He just gets beaten up a lot in TNG.
He's got so many bad ideas.
Yeah, exactly. But DS9, he really does start to shine, and I think they flesh out his character like a lot more. I really like his relationship with Odo, because they're kind of similar in a way, and they butt heads, because Odo is more like, I'm just letting the street-level stuff happen so I can actually get the big fish, and Worf is like, no, we got to shut everything down, which he didn't really do on the Enterprise, because that... security and stuff is awful, so I don't know why he thinks he can tell Odo what to do. But he just one of my favorite characters. I think my all-time favorite character is probably Chief O'Brien, and I would watch, I have watched just Chief O'Brien episodes now, not all of them, because half the time he's just standing there. Like, imagine hiring Colmini and just having him say three words as he beams you down. Like, what a weird what a weird choice. He's like a really good actor.
Yeah, yeah, he is a good
actor.
But
with Worf and him, there's an episode of DS9 where Worf fires on a ship, and it's a decloaking ship that's carrying civilians. And Ron Canada, playing a Klingon, is like, it's another courtroom thing. And
I remember that one.
They put O'Brien on the stand, and he's like, look, I wasn't in command. You know, I think Worf is amazing. And they both give like really great testimony about each other's respect for each other. And I just like O'Brien so much, because he's a non-com officer, but he's clearly been in like all kinds of... Like, our first real delve into him is another great episode of TNG, right? Where he has to talk down his previous superior, his previous captain. And that courtroom scene is just one of those real character-building moments where just these two people have served for a long time together and they've got immense respect. And O'Brien ends up saying, like, no, I wouldn't have made that call. Like, I think it was the wrong thing to do, but I wasn't in charge. I just appreciate it. I really... It's thoughtful. It's smart. These characters who, you know, they're in a fantastical fantasy world with aliens and like Q beings running around, but like somehow that feels, that really rings true for these characters, that, you know, every week they're dealing with a different triple problem or like some other weird thing. You know? So
And that's one of the great things about Star Trek in general, is just the fact that you have these diverse crews, and yet they all hold together like a family, sort of, and they have each other's backs all the time, and so that's one of the reasons why it's comfort food, I guess.
I love it. And we just came up in an hour, and I think that's a great way to end it. But... how about a little bonus round. New Trek, is it comfort food for you yet? I believe it will be one day, but like, do you go back and watch a lot of Disco? Or Picard?
I'm slowly finishing a rewatch of Disco, but a chronological one. It's, you know, they're harder to, you know, split up, right? Because most of them, except for Strange New Worlds, are season-long arcs, and so you can't just... You can, but it doesn't make as much sense to drop in and watch one episode. So I'm still working my way. I think I'm in season 3 of Disco, and I'm currently still watching season 5, of course, as it airs. And I don't tend to watch Picard too much, although I watch season 3 a bunch. I tried to rewatch season 2, and I lost interest about halfway through. What am I missing? I mean, I will rewatch Lower Decks all the time. So Lower Decks and Strange New Worlds, basically because they are
episodic,
yeah. Right? And also, I think that makes them more Trekky in a way.
I guess
the other ones I've liked some of Picard. I've liked a lot of Disco too, but it's less. The formula really means something for this show.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I don't know how to describe it. There's a quality to the episodic nature of the of Trek that makes it feel Trek. As much as the trappings of spaceships or transporters or phasers.
Right.
It's and I don't think you need the characters to be set every time. Or like every episode. But you kind of do want something to, like, begin, have a middle, pose a problem, pose an interesting problem, and then sort of wrap it up one way or the other. Or you know, leave it open. Sure.
Yeah, I mean,
you know.
Or, like, a two-parter, or, like, you know, I mean, the end of Deep Space Nine, that however many episodes that is all, you know, basically one big story, is great.
Yeah.
That works super well.
Yeah.
So it's fine to do that, I think, when you're doing an event. That's great. But it's also really nice to have episodes of the show that are... And there are ones. I think there are a few here and there. I was actually thinking I should go back and watch the episode with Harry Mudd on Disco again. Because I was...
That's great,
Was recently, not to give away any spoilers, but thinking about time loop episodes. I've seen Cause and Effect so many times that I don't think I should go back and watch Cause and Effect again.
Although, it's kind of... kind of part and parcel.
It's so good.
Yeah, A, it's so good, but also watching Cause and Effect over and over again is kind of the fun of it. Like, you've done it a million times. You just trapped it. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I do love... I love Geordi's PowerPoint in that one. It's so great. I just love... There's a thing that we always used to... We used to joke about on the superhero, specifically the CW shows, is that just due to budgetary concerns and the way the stories were, and these were largely episodic, they would have a little book club, right? They would all get together around a table, they would discuss stuff, and then they would go do the thing, which is kind of a formula that TNG had for sure. I mean, TOS did it a number of times too, and for whatever reason, it works really well in TNG because it's got... I think ultimately you've got Patrick Stewart sitting at the head of the table making choices, right? Like, he's going to hear everybody out. Everybody's going to give their little pitch. They're going to debate whether or not, you know, I'm trying to change the subject because all I'm thinking now is Worf and that stupid. Yeah, that's it. That's it. I didn't want to. I was trying not to touch the third rail of that one. Yeesh. But yeah, you know, it's like that's... I think he ultimately shuts down their discussion. It's like, no, it's her choice, I believe. I can't remember. But you can lift a lot of the trappings, like those, you know, staff meetings. But without sort of like being able to have an ethos through which those discussions and that sort of decision making is going to be made, I think it can fall flat a little bit. I think Disco suffers from the opposite a bit, which is they stop to talk about their feelings, and sure, it's in opportune times, but I would prefer it if they... It's a TV show and show don't tell, right? Like, every time they stop to discuss their feelings, I feel like, you know, you could remove those, you know, that, let's say, 8 lines between the two characters and just give a knowing glance or like a knowing look or have some sort of like look and concern and then go ahead and do stuff. There's a lot of like, as you know, you're about to get married and this is your last mission, and it's like, okay, I get it. And I really do appreciate that they've made Disco a place where you can talk about your feelings. I just don't think it needs to be done quite as much, and it's sort of that leads me to not rewatch it quite as much. I think I've watched it through twice. And A, you need to do it in order, so you can't really just pick and choose. But B, the pace slows down from time to time in a way that I wish it didn't.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, it's there's a lot of, hey, you look sad, or hey, I'm gonna pull this person aside and you know, I know the ship's on fire, but what's going on? It's like, oh my god, just do something.
We should commend TNG for at least introducing the concept of Council of Troy, who was, you know, bit of a potted plant most of the time. And like we were just saying about this, you know, she suddenly gets impregnated. There's a whole bunch of bad issues that they...
Oh, there's some really bad... Yeah.
They just deal her a whole bunch of episodes, that's for sure. Bad cards. Yeah, which is not her fault. Yeah. She's,
you know, she gets much better, you know, like later in the show.
Yeah, Jellicoe helps. He's like, put a uniform on because you are serious and act serious. Mm-hmm. And it's not like the character didn't act serious, but like it kind of gave the show an excuse to, like, you know what, we're going to put her in a uniform.
And then she orders Holodeck Geordi off to his death.
Oh yeah.
I watched that episode the other day.
Yeah, the command training stuff. That sucks, man.
What's the A plot in that one? I can't remember the A plot because I watched it for the A plot and I was like, oh, it's got this stuff in Deanna. And then I was like, oh, actually that was pretty good.
I think the Deanna stuff is actually it's better. Yeah. What is with Starfleet training? Just remember when Wesley goes to do training and it's also let somebody die. It's like, what are you talking about, man? Like, this can't be the only thing you're training them for.
It's kind of
same thing with
place.
Sarek on Sarek on in Wrath of Khan. Like, every Starfleet thing seems to be like, hey, guess what? Everybody's gonna die. It's like, what the come on. You can't. Like, how about,
I mean, it happens?
What about like the class about taking soil samples or something? Anything. You know?
Yeah, really. All right. Well, I think we should probably wrap up there. You and I could talk about Star Trek forever.
We could, yeah.
And, yeah.
And good thing we didn't have Dan here, because he hates the show.
Guy English for...
Thank you.
That's right.
My mon capitaine.
And we will be back soon with more structure
comic books,
and more
actual
Dan.
Comic books. Yeah.
Until then.
I'm going to edit the crap out of this show.